Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men TV. It is the deep dive, and we are here with everything you need to know about Sporting's head coach, Ruben Amorim. I've got Josh Williams with me as ever for the deep dive, the greatest show in Liverpool fan entertainment, some would call it. I definitely didn't make that up on the spot. Josh, thanks for joining me today. Looking forward to doing this. For anyone who watched the news show earlier on today, I said what we were going to be doing is a doubleheader. So we've done the tactic show out on redmenplus.com already. If you want to sign up as a yearly captain, you can do. The code is RACE, R-A-C-E. You will get 12 months of Red Men Plus for just $34.99. That will cover all the new manager stuff. It will cover all the transfer stuff. It will cover all the summer stuff. But most importantly, it will cover the transfer race. So use the code RACE as a captain yearly subscriber and join us. We are going to dive into the analytics behind Liverpool's interest in Ruben Amorim for this one. And before we do, Josh, I think it's probably best to just sort of give you a little taster of where he is and who he is as a manager and stuff like that. Now, he retired from football at 32 years old. He made a World Cup appearance. He was a good player, but not a great player. He took over as Braga Reserves managers 2 years later. I've skipped a little point there. But at 34, he took over as Braga Reserves manager. After just 3 months, Braga sacked their manager. And then he was installed after impressing for the reserves as the first team coach of Braga. He took them for about 3 months, won him a cup in that time, played 11 games in the league, won 10 of them, drew one of them, beating Benfica and Porto amongst those. He only lost 2 games in his 3 months in charge there. He beat Sporting as well, actually, thinking about it. He lost 2 games in the Europa League last 16 to Rangers. They were the only
Stephen
two
Gerrard, mighty Rangers.
Mighty,
mate,
yeah. Flying they were then, mate. Flying, tactical genius, Stephen Gerrard. It was, and then after 3 months, I think they paid €10 million, yeah, Sporting, to get him out of his contract with Braga. Brought him in, wins the league title for the first time in his first season in 19 years at Sporting, breaking Porto and Benfica's dominance since the mighty Boavista won it, I think, in 2001. It was a bit of a wild ride. He won a double that season with the cup as well. Won the cup and finished second the season after. Then he went and finished fourth, no trophies. Now they're top of the league table by 1 point with a double header against Benfica this week. Tonight they're 2-1 ahead in the cup second leg semi-final, and they got Benfica in the league, so obviously he wants to go out with a bang and win a double there. It's safe to say it's been a fairly rapid rise to Liverpool's radar. He's still younger than me, which pisses me off something incredibly. I thought I'd have one more manager in me. Alonso was 42, I'm 41, I'm thinking, sounds, I can make peace with that. The next one's going to be younger than me, but he's 39 years old, mate. He knocked Arsenal out of the Europa League last season after a pair of draws as well, so he's done it against big opposition since, getting knocked out by the mighty Rangers. But Josh Williams, hell, that was an
this
intro.
Is a proper mic drop moment, this, you know. You should just drop the mic and leave, mate.
What can I say, mate? I told them it was everything you need to know about Ruben Amorim. I'm trying to give them everything that they need to know, but really what they're here for, Josh, is the knowledge bomb that you're about to drop.
Well, I think everything you've said so far captures that he's making waves basically in his homeland, isn't he? And when he won that first league title as well for Sporting, first one in 19 years, at the time of winning it, they were unbeaten. And they went and lost the following week after winning the league title, which is understandable. And that was their only loss all season. So that isn't too dissimilar to what Alonso's doing now in terms of an unbeaten season.
Also, it should be mentioned that he took over that side in 1920 and they just lost their best player in the summer.
Well, that's been
bonus points for the answer.
Yeah.
Do you know who that player was?
Bruno,
there's the man. He knew it. I knew you'd know it.
Well, I think they got in an immediate... I don't know if they got him in or they integrated him or what, but I think Pedro Goncalves has since kind of stepped into that role for them, and he's a bit of an output merchant too. But yeah, he looks really good, and he wins a trophy pretty much every season. If it's not the league, he wins a cup. When he was making waves with Braga, and he made enough waves in 3 months to get poached by Sporting, I think he beat Sporting twice, Benfica twice, and Porto once in 11 games.
Wild, isn't it?
Yeah, insane. So he made a real impression at the start, and obviously he's built on that over the years, and that losing your best player thing, he's consistently kept the team competitive despite losing key players, to the extent where now, after losing Palinha, Ugarte, Matias Nunes,
Nuno Mendes,
Pedro Porro.
Yeah.
They're going to win the league title probably this season. You know, they're a point ahead with a game in hand. So, you know, that's some governor.
And just to mention, those players that Josh has just mentioned there, they've all been lost in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
As well. So if you go back further to his time there, he's losing big players every single season, and yet he's still got them competitive. And he believes in promoting youth, which I think is important. In fact, I read a news article today that said one of the reasons he fancies the Liverpool job, Josh, is because it's the passion of the fans, the want for attacking football, and the need for attacking football, but also the development pathways for young players was massively important. And if he's on the outside looking in at Liverpool's squad now, and the youth and the development of youth and the pathways for those youth players, it feels like it could be a perfect fit.
Yeah, we've almost got too many options for him when he comes in, if he comes in. But I think a lot of that, what you've just said, you know, even the likes of keeping Sporting competitive despite losing key players, getting Sporting to the top after 19 years without a title, it all feels very Klopp at Dortmund, to be honest. Even the integrating youth, you know, all of it, even the playing style, which we've just done in the last show on the paid side, you know, it's kind of possession based with a mix of direct play like a Klopp, as opposed to Alonso, who was very 5 yard passes, meticulous, borderline predictable in terms of what you're going to see, you know, philosophically. Amorim can mix it up and things.
Yeah,
so
agreed.
Lots of positives, lots of green lights.
Absolutely. So what's the data showing us then, mate?
So yeah, there's a few elements to touch on here. We're looking at his numbers, looking at the data behind his numbers, which we're led to believe Liverpool have been doing with Will Spearman and that. But the kind of shining light, the way I want to start, is his defensive numbers. So Sporting's defence looks outrageous. So we can get up to first.
Before we get into this, and before the Viz comes up, they've not got the best record for goals conceded, have they, in the league?
No.
But it's miles better in terms of expected.
Yeah, exactly. And this is where the data comes in, because the data allows you to look at the process as opposed to the outcomes. So football's a low-scoring sport. Anything can kind of happen at times. You can just concede when you don't deserve to concede. So Liverpool will be more interested in looking at the process in terms of like facing shots and facing expected goals as opposed to facing actual goals. Because if someone just scores against Sporting from 40 yards, you can't criticise Amorim for that. That just happens. So you kind of remove goals from the equation almost. That's what I tend to do anyway. I tend to look at the stuff under the radar, because the stuff under the radar is probably what he's going to bring to his next job. And that's why, despite not having the best defence in terms of goals conceded, like, you can put some of that, not that much, but you can put some of that on the goalkeeper, which we'll get onto in a minute. But in terms of facing shots, mate, they allow very, very, very little. So that's why you've got the best defence for me. Like,
hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Let's have a look at the graphic then.
So that's Europe there, okay. Europe Big Five, Big Six leagues. and that's this season. And this is shots faced. So obviously the general goal is to face as few shots as possible, naturally.
Just want to tell United.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, did you see that one on the next one? Mate, you want to see them on the next biz?
I saw it.
Unbelievable stuff. But
so fewer than Man City, fewer than Arsenal, fewer than the mighty unbeaten Leverkusen.
Yeah.
Where Liverpool?
Well, that's the top 20 in Europe's top six leagues for facing shots. So Liverpool aren't actually in it. Which is interesting. Some of that could be due to red cards, but I think we've got away from that. We've got a decent sample now, and Liverpool do face openings, but that's testament there to Amram's work. Sporting face about, I think it's about 7.7 shots per match, which is just absolutely nothing. Fewer than Guardiola City, fewer than Arsenal, who I've touched on, have got an amazing defence. Fewer than Leverkusen, who, you know, are just constantly in control of everything. So that is incredible stuff, really.
It is. It really is. Like it blew me away, to be honest with you. I did not think they'd be top in those terms before I saw the graphics. So we move on to the next one then, Europe's best defence number two.
Yeah, so this is shots faced combined with the non-penalty expected goals of those shots that you face per match. So if you put one of them on each axis and invert the axis as well, so that the teams towards the top right are the best defences, the team towards the bottom left are the worst defences. Man United, mate.
Ooh, hello.
Man United.
I see you with the mighty Ferenc and Sheffield United.
It's unbelievable.
You losers.
If they keep him in charge, mate, something's going wrong, you know.
Wild, isn't it?
It's unbelievable that your manager of Man United can deliver that. It's outrageous, but we're not here to talk about Ten Hag.
Just out of interest, while we've got you, obviously you can see Sporting and Arsenal very close together. Now, Arsenal's XG face is fractionally better than Sporting's from more shots. What do you put that down to?
Well, it's more shots, but it's marginally more, yeah. And it probably just means that when it comes to taking those shots, they are slightly more difficult to convert for those facing Arsenal, basically. So they're not clear, they're not clear cut, they're not open and anything like that. Still got a few players between the ball and the goal and that sort of thing. But I mean, I've been on deep dives this season where I've praised Arsenal's defence. Arsenal have got a great defence. So for Sporting to kind of, to even be on that level, you know, it is amazing. Like, I know they're doing it in Portugal, so it's difficult to compare. Arsenal's defence is probably better overall. But, you know, for them to be position like that, you know, you've only got to look at the company that they're in. Leverkusen, City, Arsenal, Inter Milan having a great season. You can see where Liverpool are. Sporting's defence is brilliant, and that's one of the main reasons why the top of the league and why Liverpool are probably interested in them.
Can I just throw one more thing into the mix then for that? Is I think it can come down to players at times, can't it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think that's one of the big things that can affect your expected goals for and expected goals against, certainly the goalkeeper, which is probably the next thing we should talk about.
Yeah, well, they have got good individual defenders, to be fair. They've got Diamande, who's having a good season. They've got Inacio on the left, who we know is really good, and he's linked with Liverpool. And the mighty defensive pillar that is Sebastian Coates in the centre.
Madness, isn't it?
Who is a massive set-piece threat for them, by the way.
He's just massive, that's why.
That's too,
fucking huge, always was.
Yeah, but I mean, we did...
Lurkio!
We did do a tactics show recently on the paid side, but do you reckon we should quickly offer an insight into like the mid-block thing that they do?
Yeah, let's do it then, go on.
Because like when they haven't got the ball, it's not massively crazy when it comes to the high pressing. It's very much like compact, middle of the field, kind of like that really, where they don't really press that high, but they don't drop off either.
It's a high line, it's a mid block, and it's Gandalf in the middle going, you shall not pass. They want is they want the ball wide, don't they?
Yeah,
they use the sideline as a defender.
Yeah, you will have to progress around us is the kind of approach for the most part, and that's resulted in those mad defensive numbers. But one of the reasons why they maybe are not doing this and pressing particularly high, like Liverpool or whatever, is because of the fella between the sticks. He's not Alisson Becker, is he?
Doesn't like to go there, does he, mate?
No.
He likes to sort of stay there.
Yeah.
So you could see a bit of a tactical change if he were to come in at Liverpool.
Yeah, he seems to get a nosebleed when he leaves the penalty box. His name is Antonio Adnan, I think it is. I'm actually aware of him. I think he's been on the scene for a while. He's 36 now, which potentially explains why he doesn't leave his line. But if you get up the next viz, you can see that. So this is goalkeepers only for each team in the Portuguese top flight, and this is the number of defensive actions that they make outside of the penalty box per match, basically. And as you can see, Sporting, despite playing in a kind of modern way, are bottom of the league.
It so goes against everything that they are.
Yeah,
I don't know. Doesn't it? Because, you know, with a high line, you've got so much space in behind that high line. You'd almost want your goalkeeper to be there.
Mm.
And yet, is it testament to how good the mid block is? Is it testament to the fact that the goalkeeper doesn't like and isn't comfortable outside of the penalty area? Who knows? But it goes against everything, I think, that I know of a high line.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes me think, which I think is what you're going to say, is that Alisson could make them better.
Yeah, Alisson could unlock an element of Amorim's game that we haven't really seen. It certainly helped Klopp, you know, installing Alisson compared to a Mignolet, for example. It's just different. And I expected Man United to have a bit of a benefit with that too, because De Gea was another one of them who never left his line, and Arna will leave his line. And if you touch on what we've just mentioned in terms of Sporting facing shots, you know, facing shots is usually a product of retreating and soaking pressure and things like that. But mm-hmm. So for them to face so few shots with a keeper who won't sweep, it's quite surprising. Like, it's weird.
It's mad, isn't it? It says to me that the press is working.
Yeah, it says that they're really, really compact and well-drilled and difficult to progress through and stuff, because, you know, to face as few shots as they do with a goalkeeper who never leaves his line, it is interesting. Like, but it's just an element that will obviously change if he came to Liverpool, and that could impact him going from that kind of defensive, not defensive, that mid block without the ball, to a bit more of a higher block, a higher press, knowing that his goalkeeper can almost manage the defensive third on his own.
Absolutely. I'm just looking at some of his FB ref stats here now, actually, Josh, if you want to take a little look. The goalkeeper there, isn't it? It's Adan, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's the first thing that you're sort of looking at there and thinking, actually, you know what, is that good, is that bad?
Well, the first thing is overperformance or underperformance when it comes to saving shots. So he's underperforming. So in addition to not ever leaving his line, I think he's conceded about 3 or 4 goals more than expected.
Yeah, so it's 18.8 on the post-shot expected goals, and he's goals against is 22. Now, for context, Liverpool's Alisson and Kevin Kelleher are overperforming their XG, so conceding fewer goals.
Yeah.
Whereas Adan, unfortunately for Sporting, is conceding more goals than expected, which, again, says to me that a good goalkeeper can make this tough defensive outfit even better.
Exactly, yeah. You know, he can't really sweep, by the looks of it. That's relatively understandable considering he's 36, But also when the shots come, he's not really adding value when it comes to saving the shots. He's not saving beyond an expected level. He's kind of less than ordinary based on this season.
Less than average.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
So that's an element that I'm sure Amorim would be interested in, and it could impact his game a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so obviously we spoke a lot about this last week, didn't we, about the goal difference theory and all that type of stuff. Mm. Have you got anything around that for us today?
So I think for me, in the public space, the metric out there that has the biggest indicator on how well coached a team is just expected goal difference, basically. So it's goal difference that we all know, but in an expected world, in terms of like what you would have conceded or what you would have scored if everything was normal, if everything was the same, if everyone had the same quality players, if there was no luck involved or anything like that. So if you've got your expected goals here and your expected goals faced there, subtract the faced from what you've created, and that gives you your expected goal difference, basically.
So I think there'll be a lot of people surprised by the top name on this, but having looked into Alonso, I found this out a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
But if we get the graphic up now, that'll probably be a good time.
Right, so this is interesting because, Bayern Munich look like the best team in Europe by a distance. I mean, it is quite insane, but I mean, what would you put that down to? What is interesting, isn't it?
Kane.
Harry Kane.
Overperforming.
I think I would also put it down to Bayern being in an unfamiliar position where they go a goal down more often than ever, I think. Chasing results, and as a result of that, creating an absolute ton. And
but there's no control there.
Yeah, they're still a dominant team and things like that. They're still the players are still ridiculous in terms of the typical Bundesliga player. But you know, behind the scenes, they're not particularly getting on with Tuchel. If those performances don't deliver a good result, everyone seems to fall out with each other and stuff like that. So, but I think Bayern Munich is still a good team. So, and if you look at the other side as well, I think it renders the metric a bit more on point. You know, Inter having a great season, Arsenal, Leverkusen, Stuttgart, Liverpool, Manchester City, Porto, you know, all of these are good sides. And Sporting, arguably the second best team in Europe when it comes to Amorim's impact on them. And again, if you look at them top 20, there's really not many sides in there at all that have got worse players than Amorim has. You know, he's got decent players for Portugal, you know, but they're not like a complete level above.
You'd have to say Paris Saint-Germain, Juventus, Atletico, Napoli, Liverpool, City, all got better players.
Yeah, so for Sporting to be that much better than the teams they are facing in Portugal is a testament to Amorim's work. And I should say as well, in the season before he came in, so I think that might have been 1920, Sporting's number in this department was about 0.35, so they wouldn't be in the top. They'd be underneath Athletic Club. They'd be,
you know,
between 0.3 and 0.4. Yeah, was where they were before Amorim.
It's a huge difference.
And if you look at now, that's a huge coaching impact.
All while losing players, all while tweaking his tactics, all while, you know, putting up a fight in terms of titles and cups and stuff like that. So it does look like in the numbers he's very, very good. As I mentioned, we've done a full tactical breakdown of Ruben Amorim. That one's available on redmenplus.com. You can get it, sign up as a club captain using the code RACE, RACE, for 50% off a 12-month subscription, which you should absolutely do. Two deep dives every single week, one on YouTube, one on redmenplus.com. So if you enjoy this content, now's the time to sign up. Josh, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about? Because I think you mentioned briefly about his sort of style of play, didn't you?
Yeah.
Like slow and intricate, but also, should we bring the numbers up from the last show, actually? Because that might be an interesting one for them. I think it's a good way of having a stylistic comparison between them. So first of all, I'll bring up Liverpool. I did touch on this in the last show. Liverpool, you can see passes per sequence here, rather, you know, intricate, but our direct speed is much higher than most of the teams. You can see Manchester City down at the bottom, Brighton, Arsenal, really slow, really intricate. If I then change that to the Primera Liga, whoopsie-daisy, Maisie. You can see here now, Sporting really, really in the bottom right-hand corner, averaging about 3.9 passes per sequence. Direct speed is pretty slow. That would say to anyone looking, well, hang on, you've just told me they were direct, the slow and intricate. Well, I would like you to see this next one. In terms of direct attacks, they've got more direct attacks than anybody in the Portuguese league with 62. They've also got more goals from high turnovers, with 8 goals, I think it is, from high turnovers, more than anyone else in that league, while being, is it 4th in terms of the actual high turnovers? So they know when to press and how to press. So, yes, they are slow and intricate, but they've also got this ability to swashbuckle the way down the field quickly.
Exactly, and I think that's important, because I think, you know, when we touched on Alonso, we mentioned that Alonso stylistically is different. He's closer to Arteta, he's closer to Guardiola. It's very, you know, the ball never goes more than 5 yards. It stays on the floor at all times and things like that. Amorim is a bit more Klopp in terms of they can dominate the ball, they can play, they can use kind of slow and intricate moves from the back to build the game, but they can't just hit it long over the top. They will just go to a target man almost and play direct, go from A to B really quickly. And that kind of ability to mix it, we said in the last show, it's something that I think as Liverpool supporters we like, we value. If you look at the...
Crave almost.
Yeah. If you look at the players we've got, I think Nunes would appreciate that. I think Salah would, Jota, you know, these transition players who even Szoboszlai, some players in Liverpool's squad just want basketball, I think. And if it's very slow and meticulous, you'll have a lot of control, but sometimes it will look like City and Arsenal looked on the weekend, whereas Amorim kind of mixes it up, and this is his build-up shape that he uses a lot of the time, and the ball will remain in this area of the pitch with these players, you know, slowly and things like that, and then once they've enticed the opposition in, rather than playing around them and moving up the pitch gradually, one of the lads will just go bang and hit it over the top for Nunes or
ping it,
or Gyökeres, who plays up front for Sporting, and then these three lads will be hopefully running in on a back two or back three or something like that. So that ability to switch and play not a completely different way, but just basically go along when required, I think we all quietly love that about
it's not even quiet. It's not even quiet. it's exactly what I'm there for.
Yeah.
I want to get bums off seats. You know, the crowd, everything else is all part of it for me. And you know, direct speed influences that because we react to what's going on the field.
Just one of the additional things as well is, it depends on who he plays with his back line. Obviously, you can only imagine if one of these deeper players attracting the pressure here. Say over here is Trent. One of the lads over here is Virgil. You know, you immediately associate...
Perfect, mate.
Exactly, you associate long diagonal passes with the pair of them. And if you're hitting them in the direction of three lads who are just a nightmare to cope with 1v1, you know, it's a dream, isn't it, really?
It's
a lot better than what he's currently got at Sporting, and, you know, that's you're only as good as your players, so a lot of his game, I think, would get unlocked by using Liverpool's squad.
Who's your front-runner?
For the job, my personal favourite.
Right now?
I think after looking at Amorim for the past week and delving deeper into him, Amorim. I think I want him more than anybody else, I think.
How did you feel when Barcelona were linked with him?
You know how I felt, mate, because I told you off camera. But, I felt a bit nervy. I felt like someone was trying to take something from me.
That's all you need to know.
I thought I'd stay PG there for the...
That's all you need to know. That's how much Josh wants him. I'm with you as well. I think he's a perfect fit for us at the moment, of all the names that have been linked. I am going to do some research into Thiago Motta, though, as well. I think it's important that we maybe look at some of the other candidates over the next few weeks.
We could do a show, actually, on wildcards. You know, like, names who haven't even been linked at all in the media, like a Motta, or like... Sebastian Hoeneß, for example, who's in charge of Stuttgart, doing a proper good job. There's a few lads like that who deserve a mention. But
if we're going to do that, I mean, no one's talking about Simeone Inzaghi either.
Yeah,
he should be in the conversation. Yeah. Maybe we should do that next week, unless Liverpool have, you know, already agreed by then with Amorim, in which case it's all in on Amorim. Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that could have been the title of the show.
Damn it! Listen, that is the end of the show. We're all in on Amorim. You should be too. I'm Chris Pajak. That's Josh Williams. Thank you for watching. There's more on Red Men Plus. Go over there, check it out. Use code RACE. See you next time. Ta-ra.